are now entering the Brain Trust podcast with Adam Vass and Will Yopst. I'm the host, the spooky voice, and this is the newest version of the Brain Trust podcast, a show where we talk about TTRPG design philosophy and our best friendship. My name is Adam Vass, and I'm a tabletop game designer and publisher in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Back to the old intro. I'm Williams. I'm a tabletop designer in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. You might be experiencing some time dilation. The last time you heard from us was many months ago. But we're back with a new concept, and this is actually going to be a lot of putting up drywall this episode. So let's talk about that intro. How did you feel? What was your vibe?
I felt pretty good. I did kind of go into a little bit of like coast to coast tone, which I'm not opposed to.
Yeah.
When someone hits play in their feed, when they see this episode pop up with some new art and everything, then I want it to be clear, like, something's a little different. We're not like driving through these ruts that we've created. We're trying to build some new ruts.
We need new ruts. All our ruts are broken. Someone help me adjust my rut budget. So I guess the first thing we figure out is kind of what is this show? So people that have been listening know that we have been through many eras. As Taylor Swift taught us how to do our Eras tour. Sometimes we make games from whole cloth on here. Other times we talk about our own work. Other times we actually just pretend to be at Gen Con. In talking with Adam, we both like doing that, all of these things. So we have an idea for the future of the podcast. We'd love you to come along with us. Before we go any further, let's set up a new intro. So we're gonna need music first.
Yeah, and for those who have been along the journey, Will, or I guess you know this, Will makes the music for the show, the intro and ad break music. And I feel like it's part of the fun of long-term listening. It's like, oh, this ad break has a little new jammer. Like a little secret addendums and stuff that you kind of tinker with and add over time. But so I guess, are we going for something that evokes the old, or are we going brand new whole cloth?
I think I like the old theme a lot. The old theme is a song called Ego Death, which we're both a big fan of.
Yes, that is the origin story of the show, really.
Yeah. So what if we have an updated version that maybe has some new instrumentation in it and maybe some more driving drums? And that could be like our intro and outro.
Yeah, I think I really like the beat, which has become iconic.
Yeah, for sure keeping that.
I think it, especially because it's like such a tight riff of like, it's not like other shows where the intro fades out or in, like, it feels very powerful.
When's the last time you have listened to the One Shot podcast and the theme on that one?
It's been years. It's Be Your Own Pet, isn't it? But it sounds like they're recording it through a boombox.
A Sprite can, basically, an Altoids tin, sounds like. It sounds like they are saving and re-downloading that MP3 over every episode. And so it's been, you know, probably 7 years since the last time you listened to One Shot. Yeah, it's like that. So I think, having that. Yeah, let's do that. All right, so let's restart the podcast. But then we got to talk about how we introduce ourselves. So, like, we need a tagline.
A tagline. Like
the first RPG podcast.
I feel like, yeah, so do we... Here our two options are sort of, do we pretend to have the stature that we act like we have, or do we acknowledge that we have 50 listeners and they're all our real friends?
We have way more than 50.
I've never looked at the data. I just assumed that like our friends listen to this. Every once in a while, I'll have someone be like, oh, I really love the show. And I'm like, are you sure?
Are you sure? did you accidentally turn on read the fucking manual?
We do have good ideas, but you just have to work for it. You're not getting them for free.
We have good ideas, and what we're suggesting, that ideas are actually expensive. So that's
you pay what us we with want. Time and every few minutes we challenge you to turn it off.
Okay, so maybe while we're figuring this out, we will hit a couple new intros on each episode, and we'll find one that really works with us.
Yeah.
So without further ado, should we start recording the podcast?
Yeah, this is just how we normally talk. This isn't being on at all, so let's...
No. I usually refer to a third party while we talk to each other, because I've been advised to by my legal representative. All right, hit that theme song, Will.
My gut is telling me to say, all right, it's the Brain Trust.
Yeah.
Which is a classic, a tried and true. What did we do before that?
Hey, everybody. Oh, yeah. You would do something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I like when you say, all right, because it's like you're saying, look up from your phone. Look at me. You'd be on that damn phone too long. Come on. Come on.
I also was going for the sort of Matthew McConaughey, all right.
You could say pick it up, ska style.
You know, I think the all right is not broken. I do.
No.
It serves a few functions. Let me try another fresh one. Everyone, come on down. It's the Brain Trust podcast. Come on down. It's me, the ringleader, and we're here for the circus show of games.
Nice. Yeah, that's what carnival barkers do. They make the sound of a leaky cave when they run out of runway.
They corpse. They just like, yeah, if I haven't got your attention by now, I'm not going to.
Hey, everybody, so you've been listening. Before we get more into the show, I just want to tell you, and we'll talk more about this later, but you can go to ko-fi.com/braintrustpodcast, and you can tip us for this episode. We're trying a whole new format with a whole new stuff, higher production quality, and more regular releases, and your tips will go a long way, and it'll get you a bonus episode every season we do. Yeah, that's right. I said seasons, so... ko-fi.com/braintrustpodcast.
I think our URL is actually the brain trust. Yeah, no, that's a good thing that we should definitely put on the show probably early. Visit the linktree/thebraintrust. That's linktr.ee/thebraintrust. To access our Ko-Fi, where you can donate to the show and become a subscribing member. You can get some merch. You can
subscriptance wages is what we make.
You can pick up merch. You can help us make the show. You can help pay for editing, which the show desperately needs, because listen to what we're doing here. We're freestyling.
Listen to this.
There's also links to the show's audio on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and that's it. But wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah, each season, which is going to be every 3 months, we do 2 months of episodes and take a break. We're going to have a bonus episode for you up on the Ko-Fi that you can access if you're a subscriber. And there might even be some merch that you can grab. So exclusive season merch. There is some great marketing text on this Ko-Fi. The boldest, brightest, and bird-brained ideas. So that works for me so well. And without further ado, let's hop into the next section and talk a little bit about what's to come.
I'm picturing there's a new song here.
Yeah, what kind of song do you want?
Something sensual.
Okay. Yeah, kind of like
a chime, like one of those like sexy soul chimes. Into
some brass,
some brass. Okay, yeah,
but some like some Rhodes funky
keyboards.
Yeah, I feel like
this is the behind the scenes under the covers.
Yeah, Brain Trust After Dark. I feel like there is like the Brain Trust evokes funky to me. You know those like synthesizer woodwinds? Have you seen those?
Yes.
That are always like wow 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 wow. Like they always make the really roundest sound where you're getting. Yeah, that's what I want. But not
an iwi is what it's called—an electronic wind instrument.
Yeah, they're awesome, and
yeah, they're sick.
They somehow evoke frogs and Toe Jam and Earl, and you know what? I kind of think of us as the Toe Jam and Earl of RPGs.
Yeah, I like that. Who's who?
I mean, unfortunately, I think I'm the bigger one. I don't know which one is which.
But you who wears more? I wear baseball caps. So.
Yeah, no, that. And then, oh, there's like a rebrand, huh?
And you
God,
are,
I love them.
You are kind of Cheez-Its yellow.
And I do love hot dogs.
You do love hot dogs. Yeah. So yeah, we'll do a break here. Okay. And the break starts. Toe Jam and Earl, sensual UE music, and activate. This is our kind of behind the scenes under the covers, where we talk about like what's up with the show, what we're doing. And we went to our back catalog and kind of took a look at what we do on this podcast. And instead of, for example, working on our personalities and how we do this show, we're going to contort the show to be exactly what we've done in the past, but in an official way. Which really works for us.
Yeah. Instead of just fully flying by the seat of our pants, we're going to, yeah, take the cheat codes that are like, these worked for us historically. And so we're going to pretend like we came up with that on purpose. The revisionist history of the Brain Trust podcast. And
absolutely. History's written by the winners. In this case, it's written by two losers, Adam and Will.
We survived the first season, which gives us the armor to do whatever we want in every subsequent season.
Oh, yeah. We got renewed. So anyway, yeah, we are going to put out episodes on a weekly basis for 2 months, and then we're going to take a month break. And each episode, we're going to have a different thing that we do on that we've done in the past. So some of that stuff could be playstorming, where we go from a concept to an actual play. Or things like devlogs, where we talk about our works in progress and different ideas that we've had for things. We got some other stuff on there, too. What are you looking at, Adam?
I'm looking at a news article that said Steph Curry was developing a Toe Jam and Earl movie, and I did just send you the screenshot. I don't want to read the article or have you read the article, so I just sent a picture. But that's good to know.
Yeah, that's really good to know. It looks like Steph Curry is crossing up Toe Jam and Earl.
So we want to revisit a longstanding, I would almost call it an urban legend at this point, a cryptid of game design that is Game Island. We've talked about it sporadically, but for years on the show. And that's something that we want to continue to revisit as our sort of like, I feel like pie in the sky. It is everything that we want every game to be, like, in these tiny chunks. So whether that be a setting thing, like we can develop some more of the world of Game Island, or even like mini games or mechanics and stuff that we want. I don't know if that Game Island will ever come to fruition, because that's part of its magic, is that it's theoretical.
Yeah.
But we want to keep visiting that island and taking you to there. So that's another function that we want to continue to revisit in the new era of the Brain Trust. Obviously, we're going to keep telling you about the projects that we are each designing and publishing in time. I know we both got as always, many irons in the fire, and we want to share those with you. I think we'd also like to make sure that we are echoing some of the stuff in our community and talking about new releases that are coming out, and maybe even talking to other designers once in a while about their processes and what why the hell that they're on our show, and other really captivating questions like that. We're flexing the muscles that we've been kind of working out for the last, when did we started in like 2019, huh?
Yeah, we started in a different world.
For sure. 4 years ago. But, in that time we've done a lot of things. So this is just a sort of filtration of some of those things work better than others for us and for listeners, I think both.
And so I just want to say to the listeners, thank you so much for continuing this journey with us. And if you've got questions for us, why don't you send us an email at jointhebrandtrust @gmail.com. We will read them and answer them on air. So send us any questions you have, whether it's segment ideas or, stuff that you're curious about, or light tech support I'd be interested in helping you out with. I help my mom with tech support stuff all the time. You know, how do I take a screenshot? How do I schedule a Zoom meeting? Things like that. So
it's going to be a good time, suffice to say. I think we also want to hear from you, the Brain Trust masses. We will sporadically ask for questions in the Brain Trust Discord, which you'll also be able to join via the link tree. But we just want to make a more regular habit of engaging audibly in that way. Maybe like having some kind of listener question queue that we can like use those at the start of an episode, or use them to kind of like puff maybe when we run out of steam at 30-40 minutes.
Yeah. Or we can have it be something at the end. Maybe even set up a questions channel in the Discord, which you can find in the show notes. Cool. So let's hear another new interstitial track. This one, I think, is going to be just drums. Just kind of a drum
Love
situation.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And just talk about what we've been up to for the last few months. And just catch up, honestly. All right, we're back on the Brain Trust Podcast. It's the end of the year as we're recording this. It's the beginning of the year as you are hearing it. And what I want to know, Adam, is how did your Dungeon 23 go? You get 365 rooms?
I did. Most of them turned out to be empty room. That was my...
Okay, yeah, for lease. Dungeon rooms for lease.
It's not a dungeon in the traditional sense where, you know, it's been years and years and there's like wandering skeletons. It's just like any real shopping center in America now. Just for lease.
It's the back rooms.
Yeah.
A lot of nothing. Yeah.
Our last episode was recorded in August of 2023. So it seems like there might be a lot to catch up on.
Jesus pleases. Well, I can give you an immediate kind of psychic catch up to where I am.
Hit me.
My whole neighborhood is under construction. And by that, I mean, do you remember the tweet where Connor O'Malley recorded something and called it the big pounding fucker?
Yes.
I'm woken up every day by a big pounding fucker in my neighborhood. And they are tearing down about 2 or 3 dozen buildings on my block just at once. And it is so eerie and strange. And it's a very strange, hostile experience. So I'm kind of bringing in the year with some strange construction vibes.
I love that. And also I don't. in that I hope that your building is not next on the chopping block.
Me too.
You're going to instead be the only building amongst this block of rubble.
I know. It's going to look like some kind of post-apocalyptic situation. It's like the only target, like some shitty Fallout remake.
I, of course, in the let's see, 3 months since we've spoken or recorded our speakings, released seven games. So
seven, seven games.
Yeah.
So one game per day.
Yeah, one for every day of the week. So today we're recording on a Friday. You know that's 1978 day.
Hey, congrats.
Thank you. I did a lot of horror stuff. It was very fun. I did a lot of exploring what horror is in tabletop setting, what makes a horror game compelling to play for me. And think I really like honed on this sort of 20-page zine story game format that I really love. I've always loved making, but I feel like now it's like such an oiled machine that I can just take a conceit and make it playable and like happy with like absurd efficiency, which I've always kind of like knocked stuff out to a rate that is probably unhealthy. But now it seems like the machine is really operating in a way that like those projects don't burn me out in the same way, and nice. They function as my intent, which is here's a proof of concept with a really cool theme wrapped around it, and they don't necessarily require more work than that.
Yeah, you mentioned before that there were some kind of like tenets or guidestones for you on like what makes a horror story game super compelling for you.
Yeah.
I want to hear what some of those are.
Sure. So one thing, the classic story game or improv line is like drive your character like a stolen car.
Oh, the fiasco. Yeah.
Of course, it makes sense. And I think that's like a cool attitude to have that I often bring in when I play like trad games. I don't make necessarily the best suited character for the world. I just make something that will be fun. I think codifying or mechanizing or otherwise building the game around like not necessarily forcing a player to do that, but like, yes, kind of forcing you to say there's almost this element of surprise and saying like, you got five players. Every 10 real world minutes, one of you is going to die. Setting that expectation, even just on the back of the book, say like, I think that play to lose is kind of a little bit of a game designer term, but otherwise saying like, this is a slasher game and only one of you will survive. Like you're setting that expectation and you're recognizing that. So like, not most of the fun part of watching a slasher movie is the kills. And so you relish in those moments instead of avoiding them because of character preservation. So that's like one of my biggest things. And I think obviously there are different kinds of horror, different goals of horror. That isn't true in every game that I make, and it's not true of every kind of horror movie. But if I'm trying to evoke some of the classics,
right.
That is a tentpole for me, is that death has to happen and you should make it narratively really fun to make it happen instead of really precious. And then like giving a player something to do after their character is dead is also very important, because,
you know, it's interesting that you bring up play to lose, because it is a really interesting, like almost telling on yourself using the terminology play to lose, because a common like bugbear for board gamers is that tabletop games aren't games RPGs aren't games because you can't win them. It doesn't have winning or victory points or things like that. It's a very RPG or board game geek type thing. And the kind of playing to lose is kind of keying into and implying that other games are a play to win, when really we don't look at stuff like that. But it's a really good heuristic for like, we want to make drama happen at the expense of the characters in our story.
Yeah. And I think that's what most horror is. Like, you don't go into Texas Chainsaw and be like, I hope these teens really beat the crap out of Leatherface and get out of there.
Like, can we pause? Because I watched that movie for the first time like a month ago.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
What is going on? That movie is like one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. I've seen so many horror movies. Nothing is quite like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I love it. I think
it was amazing.
One of the like perfect horror movies. It's funny because I think the director is Toby Hooper, right? That's his name.
Yeah.
When asked about what it's about, he says it's about meat. And and then I've seen Texas Chainsaw 2, which he also directed, which is like hilarious.
There's a whole thing with that he like didn't have the rights in the same way, so a lot of the directing and production was not up to him, which I've heard is a big reason why
that's
it's so different.
Interesting, and it's going to counter what I was about to say, which is he doesn't know what he's doing and accidentally made a perfect piece of art, and then when someone asked him to make it again, he made fucking slop.
Well, okay, so I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre is so perfectly made that even from the title credits, I was just blown away by this pure coolness of the title credits. It's like all lowercase. It looks like a Slint album cover the whole time. Like, it is so sweaty and strange and off-putting and oh my God.
Yeah, a horror movie that takes place in the sunlight is so unique.
Yes.
And even still, and like,
I love daylight horror.
It's
so
awesome.
Much. Shout out to Knock at the Cabin. Also loved that movie. That's a daylight horror movie.
It is. And that was a fun one. To circle back, I think just like setting expectation is one of the keys to horror. And I think even in Texas Chainsaw, like the pretense, like this is based on a true story, it makes it innately scarier, even though that was not necessarily like explicitly true. But
yeah,
For
those that haven't seen it yet, Texas Chainsaw Massacre begins with a narration voiceover that I think all RPG designers could take a look at for writing, because the opening crawl, let me grab it right here. Oh my God. So the film, it goes like this. The film which you're about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths. Wait, let me get the full one.
You could probably just drop the audio in if you want to be.
Oh, be like a pro.
A real
okay,
podcast.
Yeah.
The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths. In particular, Sally Hardesty and her invalid brother, Franklin. It is all the more tragic in that they were young. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see as much of the mad and macabre as they were to see that day. For them, an idyllic summer afternoon drive became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
What's working for me on a huge level is the line of, had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected or nor would they have wished to see as much of this horrible shit.
Yeah, amazing.
Like, and almost implying that, like, it's good that they died. It's like a grace.
The mad and macabre is such a great, like, Eminem. That's
that
like,
reminds me of your writing too. Like
thank
this
you.
Opening.
I love that alliterative like thing. I think this is probably some subliminal level of influence on my writing, but I wrote down just while we were hearing that of like tragedy, macabre, and bizarre. Like these words that they are putting, so this is sort of the back of book text, right? Like to translate this to RPGs, this is what you write on the back cover to get someone to want to read it or play it. And those three words set the tone of Texas Chainsaw Massacre so perfectly and gear you up. Like, one, you're walking into it knowing, well, it's a massacre, but also a tragedy. So, like, this is an account of five characters with the expectation that they're going to die or at least be, like, extremely harmed. Then calling it mad and macabre and bizarre is going to give you some of the, like, setting.
It's going
and
to stretch.
Tone.
Yeah, it's going to stretch your ideas of what this might be. Because Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you have a certain idea of what's going on. You're not thinking of someone in the bone room that's just looking at the fucked up furniture. Like, that's not what you think
right
when you hear that title. Like,
right, even just the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is such a good, like, we know we're in Texas, we know that people are being massacred, and they're doing so with a chainsaw, which is like an extremely loud and violent weapon. And like, in three words, you've done more heavy lifting than most of our setting design ever.
Yeah, you're getting the who, what, where, when, why, and how in that. And it makes me think, like, you can have this be the only thing you read aloud to your players before making characters. That could be enough.
Yeah.
And I say that because I have just played last night my first session of Wolves Upon the Coast, which is a giant fucking game. And the only thing you start with is four sentences, and then you make characters. And the four sentences are this: your history is gone, it was taken from you, or you from it. You were thralls. Now your master lies dead at the bottom of a raiding vessel, equipped for adventure. You are free. And then you rock. And then you start rocking.
Yeah, we talked about this sort of economy of language with like Electric Bastion Land and Into the Odd.
Yes.
And stuff. And I think it is a major strength of a, or like, it's a badass flex for a lot of good writers to give you more than enough, like, to get your imagination going. Like, that's what role playing is, right? Like, you, that brief pitch from Luke Gearing has me already visualizing the world and who I am in it, and like,
yeah. And same with the Texas Chainsaw crawl.
Yes, yeah.
And it's like, so I invented this term yesterday in talking to a client about an edit I was working on, but the amount of the cubic gameable content that you get from a few sentences, like, some writers are able to have a huge amount of cubic gameable content. I think Aaron King is another great example of this, of like, very deft use of language for maximum effect at the table.
As an aside, I think this might be a Tech Lab episode.
Ooh, we need a freaking Tech Lab theme.
I think
now
we need a Tech Lab stinger. We can retroactively add it before, or we can just throw it right here and be like, yeah, actually, this
right
is a
here.
Tech Lab.
I want bubbles, like chemistry bubbles.
Yeah, and then like a robotic, like, Tech Lab. Welcome to the Tech Lab. Please wash your hands.
Welcome to the Tech Lab. What's the instrumentation? Synthesizers?
Oh, yeah. It's like the Strong Bad email rave.
The system is down.
Email.
But in
right, so the Tech Lab is when we talk about a specific mechanic, a set of mechanisms, or a way of thinking about games that you can introduce to your table if you're running games, or your books and your zines if you're writing them.
Yeah, I think this Tech Lab subject is either economy of language or even like back of book text,
yeah.
Subtitle. I get, yeah, like voiceover, I would maybe even call it. Like,
yeah, the
this
VO.
Is your game's voiceover. This is the hook that you're hooking into the person reading it to go, like, let's fucking go on this journey.
This is the text you send your game group to convince them that you're going to play this game.
Yeah.
I just have to note, Seb told me as we were watching Texas Chainsaw, which is one of their favorite movies, that the narrator did that narration in exchange for one joint.
Which is one, that's like such a perfectly Texas Chainsaw piece of trivia.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so much, I wish, I'd love if we would just have like a horror movie podcast where we could just indulge full length. Maybe that'll be one of our Ko-Fi
bonuses.
Well,
let's get a segment rolling. Okay.
Yeah, they use real entrails in that movie, and they also are shooting it in Texas on like 100-degree day.
Fuck
and
that.
All the cast members were like, this fucking sucked. People were putting like wax in their nostrils so they didn't have to smell the like actually decomposing stuff that was all around. And they were actually just all dripping sweat. Like, all, there's not a lot of effects in that movie insofar as the physical discomfort that it's relaying. All of the actors, I think, fucking hated it. And that's just what it was, because it was the 70s. It was a low-budget movie. Like, no one thought to do it. And there was no, like, kind of regulation, so they're shooting for, like, over 10 hours a day.
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a miserable experience in a meta way that comes through in the misery of its characters.
Yeah, complete one-to-one transfer of that. You can smell everything watching the movie.
It's about meat.
It's about meat. I like the gender stuff going on, too, with Leatherface.
Yeah.
Like that there's a really interesting read on that.
You should.
Leatherface.
One of my favorite horror podcasts is called Girls Guts Giallo, which I actually think you might have turned me on to a year or two ago.
Yeah, right.
But they did a episode about Texas Chainsaw and gender, and it was really fascinating. And there's a lot in that episode and in writings about Texas Chainsaw, too, of like Leatherface as a sympathetic character and not like a Michael Myers boogeyman of just like, there are strangers coming into my house and that's scary for Leatherface too. Like, it's a different experience. That's the strangers if you flip the camera around, you know? Like,
I totally have that read for sure. Like, that's what I saw in the movie, and it makes it like even more strange. Like, there's not like the lumbering, you know, Jason style killer that's just chasing you. Like, the characters step into a place, and then the things happen to them because of that transgression.
Right. They're not supposed to be there. And I think that's kind of one of the big things that makes that movie scary, is just like this sort of accident that everyone is finding themselves being a part of. Both the family and the visitors are like, this is all one big nasty accident.
Wow. Texas Chainsaw, go watch it. Brain Trust Movie Club.
We're back in the Brain Trust. We're back in the tech lab.
Okay. I want to look at some of our first sentences.
Oh, I mean, great, because I will grab one of mine that I know you have praised in the past, and that's the...
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'm going to pull up Torque here, and I'm pull up Plasmodics. Those are going to be my two. Because I think Torque... I like the one in Torque a lot, and I think Plasmodics is a cool one. So I love the first sentences or first opening paragraphs of books, and it's something I try and like internalize whenever I come across them. Whenever I read a new book, I kind of rate the first sentence against all the other first sentences I've ever heard.
I've got my two, which are How to Summon a Spirit, which was one of my newer Halloween releases.
Oh, yes. And oh, my God. That one rocked.
Also, Cyber Metal 2012, which I know is one of your,
Wolf.
Like, case studies here.
Hey, that's how good it is. I haven't opened Cyber Metal in a few months, and I already knew it.
Yeah.
I already fucking knew it. All right, let's end with Cyber Metal.
Cool. In that case, you go first.
Okay, great. I'll start with Torque. So Torque has two intro things. There is a dedication, and there is the intro sentence, or intro paragraph. The dedication, I'll just read. This game is dedicated in part to the nasty little piece of road called the One Lane Bridge. Wrought iron trellis caging a too small street for cars and pedestrians and cyclists. The long drop below with parkway intersecting its giant arch. The way the bricks would like to fall below. The myth that of the 100 miles per hour you could hit on it if you timed the lights right. The signal 1 mile till you're home exactly. That's all real. That's all real shit from my hometown. And the intro sentence or paragraph for Torque is, and just imagine like an engine rumbling here. I eat the dust of the weird world. Motes on the wind, unbothered by my trivialities. The tectonic shift of blacktop, balding tires and patience. Drivers in formation, finger four, convoy or caravan. Screaming to the next rest stop, tape decks melting in the rotten sunlight. Cars, if you can call them that. Cars on ripping hot vertices against the world.
Yeah, and as mentioned, like, you can picture it. You can put yourself behind the wheel in this world right away. Like, this is dropping you into Torque.
You can hear the guitar plugging in that.
Like... I also made a note because this is something I want to, the dedication is something I want to circle back to in a future tech lab. Okay, and I wrote it on the sheet here, but I want to talk about the self insert. I want to talk about putting your history in your game and yourself in your games. But that's a segment for the future. But on that same subject, How to Summon a Spirit is my story game hack of dialect where you're talking about urban legends that change over time. And things like Bloody Mary, or we have one in my hometown that was the house with no windows, which is actually one of the adventures in the zine, to kind of, again, glimpse at the self-insert. But here's the inside cover, like the first text. At midnight, enter a pitch-black bathroom alone with a lit candle in one hand and nothing in the other. Stare at your reflection in the mirror intently. Maintain eye contact for 3 minutes of silence. Whisper, "Your pain is mine now," and blow out the candle. If performed correctly, you and your reflection will trade places. Play this game as your mirror self, then perform the ritual again in reverse to switch back.
That rocks. That's so cool.
It is... this, again, like, very obvious meta, like, this is what the game is about, like, these made-up rituals, these things that teenagers do to sort of brush up against the occult, and, like, the sort of thrill that is horror in youth, right? Like, this is the talk to me hand, this is the rumor of saying Candyman in the mirror, like, this is itself an urban legend asking you to evoke it before playing a game that is about such a thing.
That's so sick. That's so great. I mean, it fits the theme so well, and it sounds like someone is telling you something that they heard from someone else.
Yeah.
Like, it's got that really good quality to it, and it just gets you in the vibe. Okay, this next one, for Plasmodix, I put it on the cover of the book. That's sick. How much I wanted this to be a thing. So, Plasmodix, it's my upcoming game of mutant freaks in the weird future. And here's the very first text that you read before you even open the book. Why is this mutant smiling? A rank and primrose path, both rootstock and scion. A chimeral garden in the after-after, full of us mutant fuckers. A tabletop role-playing game after the gamma-soaked and world-ended predecessors. Neither retro nor cloned, but stepping out on its own primordial soup with an eight-fingered foot.
I love it. I love that it's simultaneously a sales pitch. Like, it's exists outside of the book, but also it doesn't. Like,
yeah.
Like, it tells you, like, this is a role-playing game, but also addressing
it's gonna
you
be
as, like,
strange. Yeah.
Character within it almost.
Yeah. And it has a lot of like prose that is just supposed to sound pretty and then a bunch of hard like stops within it to like rip it out. Yeah, I was really happy about that.
Yeah, and putting that on the cover is tight too. Like it I think so I was just recently at PAX Unplugged and one of my takeaways was 90% of the people here don't care about the stuff I make, and that's okay because 10% are going to think that I make the coolest shit that they've ever seen.
You're a god.
And I yeah. want that. I want passion, I guess. I want the care, and I want to find freaks like me. And I think even just putting the word fuckers on your cover is like, it's going to filter out some people who would not like it anyway, but it's going to attract magnetically the people who are going to already kind of be predisposed to liking the stuff that you like.
I have such it's such a battle whether or not fuckers is going to survive on the original on the print version, so we'll see. But give me that. I mean, this is going to be one of the goats. Cybermetal 2012.
Yeah, so this is the first text page after the table of contents. It says, I am the wolf. I am the creature that hunts in the city night, that lurks in the alley's shadow, that waits behind the lids of your eyes for slumber to come, to feed my fury, to drain you of blood and spirit, to make your body mine. I am the wolf. I am the spirit that sinks the song stuck in your head, that uploads your doubt and hatred, that programs your every thought and movement, to save your soul, to connect you to the world, to melt your mind. And then in a different typeface, kind of aside from that, hell is real. God is a feeling and I've gone numb. The city is ours. Consciousness is a frequency. Plug me in and turn me the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is this
punch
is like
in the air right now.
Almost two separate things to me. Like the wolf text is this sort of poetic in-universe threat almost of like, here's an example. And the first I am the wolf is written I am the wolf, proper noun. The second is at the wolf, like a username to sort of.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
To juggle again this like cyber metal, like physical and digital beings, I guess. And then the bottom text, the hell is real segment. That was my Electric Bastion land of saying like this says everything you need to know about the experience you're going into in five sentences, and it just wants to be evocative as hell and just like, yeah, you want to light that fuse. Like that's one of the functions of these texts, is to get players to want to turn the page or to want to envision themselves in this world and to like get them punch in the air, like you said, just like,
yeah,
jack people up.
I like how it's also a call and response too. Like it's an individual is speaking and you get this in universe perspective, and then you get like, if the book itself could speak, this is what it's saying in response to a character expression. And it's just an incredibly good first impression.
That was the other thing, is like, you know, I often say, and I get annoyed by myself by saying it, you only get one chance to make a first impression. You want your cover, your back cover text, this tagline, whatever we're calling it, to compel the reader to engage with it, whether that just be by reading more, whether that be by getting it to the table as fast as possible. Like, whatever engaging means for them, you want to supercharge that energy. And yeah. There are different ways to do that for different people, different settings. Depends what your goal is with your book and your setting, but like it's such a powerful tool to use to get people as excited as you are for what's to come.
I think we should make up a name for this concept of like the first impression. Because it's not really a foreword. It is not really a first sentence because it can come in different spots. Maybe it's, we call it like something like the slug or something like that.
It's, yeah, it's not quite the pitch because it's not about the game itself in a way. It's more about the experience. We earlier had said the voiceover, but it's also not necessarily like a out of, but I think with voiceover, it's where that voice is coming from is kind of significant. Like if it's in fiction or out of fiction, this is, I mean, it's almost the call to action of the game itself.
Yeah.
Like, or like the powder keg, like what is your powder keg paragraph that is.
How about we just call it the bomb?
Yeah.
It's like the bomb that starts it off.
Yeah. Like the thing that is going to incite all of the chaos that is the rest of your book, the rest of your game.
Oh, what's... There's something like... It's not edict, but there's a word that's something that incites chaos. Okay, while we think of a word for this, I want to know, everyone listening to this, you're probably thinking of your own work or a game that you like or a book that you particularly like or maybe a movie that has one of these. I want you to tell us what those are. Why don't you send us an email at jointhebraintrust@gmail.com. Tell me what your bombs... Send me all your bombs. yeah, dive bomb maybe. But... Yeah, I want to hear what you think. I want to hear what you've come up with, and I want to hear games you think that do this particularly well. And you know what? I think this is the end of the first episode of the Brain Trust podcast.
Instigator is a word that came up when I... Or Firebrand. I guess Firebrand is a game already.
Firebrand.
Provocateur. I'm just on Word Hippo now. Agitator.
Yeah.
Spark plug, that's a pretty good one.
Spark plug, that's good, and it doesn't have like a weapon connotation.
Yeah, fire starter is another good one, but like
fire starter.
Let's call it a fire starter.
I think fire starter is what I want. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Stephen King. Actually, fire starter is for us. Okay, send us your fire starters. What lights the blaze? All of that stuff. But yeah, it's, you know, like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode. We have a Ko-Fi that you can go to. That is ko-fi.com/thebraintrust.
The
Brain Trust. And you can send us a one-time donation or a monthly donation and access seasonal rewards like a bonus episode and maybe even some merch. And you can just support us making our thing. Otherwise, you can go to linktree.com/thebraintrust to find out where all of our stuff are. But in the meanwhile, I have been Will Yopst.
And I have been Adam Vass.
And brain emoji, handshake emoji. You still doing the emoji? That feels right.